Light beer, dark money. Agree on something. Politics, culture, and the intersection of faith, freedom, and free enterprise. And now, here are your hosts, Light Beer, Chris Clements, and Dark Money, Sean Noble.
Welcome back to Light Beer, Dark Money. I'm Sean Noble.
And I am Chris Clements.
And
as you can tell, my voice is rather deep today.
Yeah, it sounded like Walter Cronkite.
Got like this chest thing going on. I don't know what's going on.
Maybe you should keep it.
You know, it sounds kind of interesting, doesn't it? No, it's not
it's
COVID.
It's definitely the radio voice.
But it's something, and it's gone through our house last week. So,
well,
a little bit different tone.
Did your wife have a deep voice right now?
No. She, when I left the house this morning, she's like, I feel horrible. I'm like, oh, here we go.
Well, you know, it's in the post-COVID world, everyone's getting everything else.
Yeah.
I guess
the flu is making a comeback.
Yeah, well, flu and bugs of all sorts. When I, you know, we have kids in school, all those things that have that typically are there that were gone because they weren't in school or because COVID was overwhelming everything.
Which is all the more reason to keep people wearing masks on airplanes.
Yes,
for another 15 days.
I'm so frustrated because we have a trip next week, and
yeah,
I was
so
like. We have a chance to...
Yeah, I thought this weekend was it.
Yeah.
And no. No, thank you, Dr. Faustus.
Yes.
And the CDC.
You know, the problem is that there's a...
2 weeks.
Yeah. Well...
Here we go again.
Even Joe Scarborough, not
who is
a conservative anymore.
Mighty person, right?
Yeah. Even he tweeted yesterday about how frustrated he was that they had extended the mask mandate.
Well, it's especially when you have every single airline CEO. I mean,
single one of them.
Pretty much every one of them.
Yeah,
has
the trade associations,
the CDC, trade associations. Everyone has written to the government and said this is not needed. In fact, you're safer on our airplane than you are just in a bank building for
anywhere
sakes, or anywhere on the planet.
Anywhere, because they have the best filters.
Well, the interesting thing about that is. When I even the last couple of weeks when I've been on some airplanes, either going to Dallas or going over to California, the flight attendants are not making a big deal.
Yeah,
they know
it's bullshit.
They announce the regulation, they ask for your cooperation, and then they say, "And have a nice flight." And then there's people doing all sorts of stuff, and they're not getting into it.
Well,
anymore.
And the thing that I've appreciated about how the flight attendants have dealt with this since almost the beginning is when Reagan, you know, for most of COVID, we were traveling. She was two. And to try to keep a mask on a two-year-old on a plane for any amount of time, we could keep it on her to get on the plane, but we couldn't keep it on her when she was on the plane.
Oh, no.
And the flight attendants literally were great. They never gave us a hard time about it because they know that she
was
no
threat. Some
horror
stories of flight attendants losing their noodle, which I don't understand. I mean, they must know.
We have
or other people
seen,
losing their noodle about your two-year-old.
Yeah,
within a flight.
Yeah, thankfully I've never had that.
Some Karen
that problem.
You know,
right?
Make that two-year-old keep their mask on.
Yeah, because that two-year-old is certainly a threat.
Yeah,
not. So
what else is going on in the world?
Well, the big news breaking overnight was that Elon Musk. We know that he bought a big stake in Twitter, $3 billion.
Yeah,
9%.
9%.
And now he's made an offer to buy Twitter outright, $43 billion.
$43 billion cash.
That's at $54 a share.
What do you think Jack Dorsey is thinking?
I think he's thinking, let me cash in, baby.
Or Vanguard or BlackRock.
Any of those guys. I mean, this is a $54 a share price is pretty dang good.
Yeah.
And what I saw, my wife texted me. She's out of town, so she texted me this morning. She picked up some intel that this is an effort that he might take Twitter private. Take it out of the public's. Publicly traded company.
Yeah.
Which
I saw something about that this morning
as
well.
Which I would suspect he'd want to do because he hates the SEC. And if he takes the company private, He can give them the finger.
Yeah.
And he should. They've been...
Well, he kind of gave them the finger anyway in terms of how he disclosed his...
He did.
When he finally disclosed the shares that he bought.
He disclosed late and he filed the wrong form. And I'm assuming that that was on purpose.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, the richest man on the planet...
Which is amazing when you think about that.
Yeah, guy's worth more than $200 billion.
I mean, 2-3 years ago, we were saying it was a race between Warren Buffett and...
We had Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, and Jeff Bezos.
And Jeff Bezos, and now here comes Elon Musk.
And Zuckerberg was in there for a little while.
Politically, seems to be much more... people try to pigeonhole him as maybe a conservative. I think he's just more libertarian. You know, in the purest sense.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I mean, he's not a true conservative, that's for sure.
No.
He's libertarian in some things. But this is a guy who is so much a believer in green energy that's where he's made all his money. Now, I criticized him years ago for the amount of government subsidies his companies were taking.
This company didn't make any money for
years.
Years. And was taking government handouts.
Right. So he's a business guy. And he may have some conservative leaning ideologies. I think he just doesn't like authoritarian control. So that's a good thing. But it'll be interesting to see if this actually comes to pass. And Ben Shapiro retweeted, there was an employee of Twitter that said, if Elon Musk comes in, I'm going to have to rethink my status as an employee of this company. And Ben Shapiro says, this will be the greatest purging of leftists from Twitter.
Just voluntary.
Yeah. And good for all of us, if that's the case, because they have been... they've not treated information the way that you would in a open and free society.
Well, one of the leading pieces on the Daily Wire today is Elon Musk can go F off. Reaction explodes online over Musk bid to outright buy Twitter. Take it private.
Yeah.
People on the left are like, oh my gosh, this is so horrible. We might... actually have to let back on Donald Trump and Tucker Carlson and
Alex Berenson
and everybody else who were tossed off by talking truth.
Yeah. Well, Trump maybe not.
I mean, Trump you can go any direction on that, but
Berenson and others, I mean, the things that they got kicked off Twitter for are absolute 100% true fact.
Yeah.
Now.
But back then, it was misinformation.
Yeah,
we talked about that on our last podcast. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Max Boot, I'm frightened by the impact on society and politics if Elon Musk acquires Twitter.
This is the same Max Boot that tweeted the Biden-Hunter laptop story was a Russian misinformation ploy and not real. I mean, fact.
What? It was Russia for years.
Russia.
Yeah. He says, we need more content moderation, not less. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about this a little bit. I am a free speech absolutist. I just think that if you have a platform like this, yes, it's private. Yes, it's a public company, but it's a privately owned business, whatever you want to call it. But it's in the public square, and therefore,
well, so that then raises a question: is if Elon takes it private, that undermines even more the argument that it's a quote unquote utility or something that needs to be regulated.
Yeah,
you know, because it's ultimately, well, I disagree with what Twitter did. They had every right to do it because they're not the government. The First Amendment is about government control, not private companies.
Sure.
So it'll be interesting to see.
So you know what you're getting into when you go on there.
Yeah.
Whew, you know, but it's almost an offer that they can't refuse, though, in some respects. I'm sure they will refuse it.
Well, but. I don't know. Will they? I mean, it, if you look at the big institutional investors, the risk for Twitter in the long run is it becomes so toxic that, you know, because the value has gone down.
Sure.
It only went up after Elon disclosed that he had bought a huge amount of stake. And then they offered him a board seat, and Twitter's price went up again. And now he's talking about buying it, so the price is up.
In early 2021, the Twitter price was approaching $80 a share, and then steadily has declined until just last week was under $40 a share. Now it's up to like, you know, $50 a share.
Yeah, he offered it 54.
Yeah.
That I mean, if I'm an institutional investor, I'm saying, yeah, cash out, baby. Let's do this thing. Go put the money somewhere else.
Other than Elon Musk, you've got really only three other large investors, one being Jack, the founder.
Well, he's only
18 million or whatever. And then you've got institutional investors like Vanguard and BlackRock, which ironically enough, they seem to be institutionally controlling of Disney and a bunch of other companies.
Well, those Vanguard, going I mean, those are huge woke. Funds. They've got tons and tons of cash, but I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out for sure. And I'm waiting to see when do they do the mini series on Jack Dorsey and Twitter. They did Showtime did Uber.
Mm-hmm.
Apple TV has got WeWork. And maybe it's because Jack Dorsey's not quite as flamboyant as Adam Newman from WeWork or Travis Kalanick from Uber, because they just make very interesting stories because they were so crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, visionaries, but crazy.
Jack is rather dry.
Yeah.
When you've seen his testimony, you know, in front of Congress, most of the time he's high, and so he doesn't quite even understand what he's saying. And then you know, sometimes his answers are just not inspiring either.
Yeah.
Yeah, we kicked the New York Post off of Twitter. Yeah, that was a mistake. Sorry.
Sorry.
And that's over the whole Hunter Biden laptop story that we believed was Russian misinformation, but then found out that
it was actually a real laptop.
All of it is true.
And it was not the first laptop that he had lost or misplaced.
Oh, my gosh. Hunter Biden. I mean, if that was any one of the Trump kids,
it would be
front page, NBC, nightly news every night, pounding
day
away.
After day after day.
Donald
after
Trump day. Jr. or Eric Trump or whomever else.
Yeah.
I mean, it would just be constant. And what's overwhelmingly apparent is that this guy was the president, vice president at that time, bagman.
Yeah.
Collecting cash, funneling cash to the vice president, paying for bills at their home in Delaware, and he was the funnel. It's just unbelievable to me. Experience in terms of his board seat on Burisma, and then you know his investments in the Chinese firm.
Well, this
it's
will
obviously a payoff.
Here's my prediction.
And Twitter's been at the center of all that and has squashed most of it.
Right. Here's my prediction.
That's why I bring it up.
This will be the Hunter Biden laptop problem and the exposure of all the things that Hunter Biden's been involved in is going to be serious enough that Biden will not seek re-election.
Well, let me ask you this.
That's my
prediction. Is it apparent to you that the Democratic machine is turning on Joe Biden?
No question.
And have you ever seen anything like this? I mean, it was reported earlier today that even Don Lemon of, you know, CNN, his lead thing last night was about Joe Biden, his poll numbers, Hunter Biden. All of a sudden, everyone has decided to talk about this stuff. And for the past year and a half, they've refused because they wanted to get Joe Biden elected. But now that we're almost in a war, now that the economy is, you know, tilting on recession, or all these things are coming to light, which everyone knew to be true, but now it's overwhelming. you know, it seems like the machine is turning.
Well, they are in a complete panic. November, barring Republicans completely screwing it up, which they are very capable of doing.
Absolutely. Mitch McConnell said that this week, and I totally agree with him.
We have the ability to really screw this up
by nominating bad candidates.
Yeah, they've snatched defeat from the jaws of victory a number of times. But have you seen
something like this? I mean, I can't remember anything like this. And you know, I mean, you know, Obama had his issues, but very popular, very charismatic, you know, very likable Democrats, and even some Republicans. You know, generally, you might not have agreed with his policies, but they supported him as a president.
I think that the closest Bill Clinton,
even with all his problems, it was not like this.
No, it's interesting because when Bill Clinton was going through impeachment, while, you know, the challenges of what he had in his past did lead to impeachment, there were Democrats that voted for impeachment.
Yeah.
There was no appetite for conviction in the Senate, and his numbers went up.
Yeah,
the public were.
But this is
kind of
shrugged
it off.
You've got some new polling that's come out even this week that's showing Hispanics at 56% disapproval.
Yeah,
you've got independents at like his approval rate is like
26%. 26. Yeah.
So 1 in 4, basically. That's numbers that we've never seen in I don't think we've seen in the modern presidency. And that's scary because that emboldens our enemies. It's not something that I'm sitting here saying, oh, yay, that's an opportunity for Republicans or conservatives. I'm looking at those numbers and saying, oh, no, this because it doesn't help us on the world stage.
No question.
In terms of what we're having to deal with.
Well, what happens with Ukraine and how Western democracies respond going forward will be important. But I think that, you know, while the U.S. has been leading to some degree, I mean, the other NATO countries have taken more definitive steps in defending Ukraine than we have. And, you know, I think there's a real mix in the administration. I mean, every time the administration, you know, Biden says something and the administration tries to walk it back and Biden says something else and, you know.
Well, that was the entire European trip.
Yeah.
Every single speech. They had to walk something back. But I mean, it's not just what's going on in Europe, but it's what's about to happen at the border. You know, most Hispanics are not in favor of that at all.
Right.
You know, border communities are being overrun. We're a border state. We're about to be overrun. Governors are taking it into their own hands, trying to challenge the Biden administration on everything that they can, get them to act. You know, you have some people advocating for more laws or a grand compromise. And my point back to them is, no, we just need to enforce the laws that are on the books when it comes to the border. And the weird thing about this is that all this didn't have to come to pass.
No.
You know, Joe Biden could have come into office, made some tweaks because he didn't like Donald Trump and defeated Donald Trump, but could have done a whole lot of nothing. And he would be in better shape.
Well, the status quo would have been better for sure. I think he was trying to appease the left, the hard left of his base. And that will result in Republicans taking the House and probably taking the Senate. And then his last two years are going to be basically meaningless. And the scandals, I'm telling you, when you have Republicans in the House, forget the Senate, but Republicans in the House are going to be investigating this administration. The Hunter Biden thing is going to get dug into. And this is going to be just the drip, drip, drip. And it will end the Biden presidency. I'm not saying he's going to be impeached and removed from office. I'm saying that he's going to be incapable of mounting a re-election campaign.
With inflation at 8.2%.
Yeah, I mean, it
that number came up across the other day, and it's the 70s show all over again.
Yeah.
So it's just it's more of the drip, drip, drip of just incompetency and more bad news from a policy standpoint.
Right.
So forget about the personal stuff. The policy standpoint has been just an abject failure.
Yeah. This is worse than Jimmy Carter.
I never, ever thought I would see that. And I never thought I would hear somebody say that, you know, in modern times. I mean, Jimmy Carter, that was pretty bad. We lived through that. As young people, we saw what we had to live through, and this is much, much worse.
Yeah. So we'll wait and see.
Everything that is new, old, yeah, is, old new is new again.
The question for the Democrats is going to be, you know, what's their posture after they lose the House and probably the Senate, and what do they do? Because are they going to have Kamala be their nominee? Are they going to have Buttigieg?
Her poll numbers are worse than the president's.
Yeah.
Or maybe they're on par now. I haven't checked.
They're in a bit of a bind. And as, again, the only way that they get out of this is if Republicans screw it up, which, again, we are capable of doing. Nominating Donald Trump in 2024 would be a good example of not handling it the best way possible.
What's interesting about that is that, you know, he Donald Trump came out the other day, you know, endorsing the candidacy in Pennsylvania of Dr. Oz.
Right.
And almost unanimously, at least on the conservative sites that I look at, he was trashed. Like, Dr. Oz is not one of us. That is a bad choice. Who is advising you, Mr. Trump?
But Trump isn't one of us.
No, that is true.
Trump isn't one. I mean, people forget that this guy is not a conservative.
Yeah.
There's
a difference between
popular.
Yeah, being a conservative and being a populist.
There's no core conviction in Donald Trump's philosophy. None.
In that respect, he's no different than Joe Biden. No guiding principles.
Right.
That's whichever exactly way the wind blows.
Right.
So you're a party to whoever's in your ear last.
Yeah.
You know, for Joe Biden, it's Bernie Sanders or AOC.
Right.
Sandy Cortez.
So it would
for
be
Donald
nice.
Trump, it's,
it would be nice
knows.
If Republicans had somebody in 2024 that had some guiding principles, whatever they are, just had some guiding principles. They weren't just flailing in the wind. But maybe that's asking too much.
Because you owe it to your philosophy to learn how to win.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, but you have to have a philosophy. That's kind of important.
The state of American politics is a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, it is. The country is suffering from it.
Because the last two presidents now, Trump and Biden, had no core philosophy. In Trump's case, at least we had people around him that had a core philosophy, so there was good policies, at least.
Well, you had four people who finally came around him that were in the right space to enact core principled policies. The first being Mike Pence, which I've said on this podcast before.
Right.
Mike Pence not only saved the Republic, he probably got more done than any other vice president in modern history in terms of the legislative successes and the judgeships.
You know, and that... That's
which,
probably
which people
something,
don't give him enough credit for.
No,
but
it's probably
really
something
true.
Historic. I mean, historically, Mike Pence is the most consequential vice president we've ever had.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely correct.
Well, because there's no way that Trump on his own would have been able to accomplish, from a policy perspective, the things that were accomplished, the tax cut, the pullback of regulations, the nomination of good conservative judges who adhered to the Constitution. I mean, that came from the vice president's office.
It did. It did. And it was his office that was vetting the judgeships. It was his office working with Congress to get those tax cuts and less regulation put through. The Trump presidency will go down as one of the most deregulatory presidencies in modern history.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a good thing.
Yeah.
And
I mean, the economy
and the judgeships, the economy that speaks for itself.
Cruising. Yeah. Well,
you know, and thankfully Twitter had nothing to do with that.
That's right.
The Twitter dumpster fire lived on.
We'll have to report back. People will know what happens, but it will have a further conversation, especially if Elon does, in fact, purchase Twitter and takes it private.
What are all these people in California going to do, all these lefties going to do with their Teslas now if he takes over Twitter?
Oh, that's a great question.
You know, because that's like the number one car in California. Are they going to burn them and blow up their batteries?
No, they don't want to pay the gas prices.
Yeah, for $7 gas?
I don't even know what gas prices are.
Well, yes, I do.
The beauty of driving a Tesla.
I do. The beauty of driving a big GMC truck.
Yeah. You
God bless truck. America.
God bless America. But Teslas are made in America, yep, so are. God bless America. Well,
I think what
we
he's
wish
doing
Elon
is,
the best.
I mean, and not only do I think it's great. I think it's funny in some ways. I think some of his tweets over the weekend about what, you know, about Twitter and what it really is have been fascinating and fun. And so, I mean, when you have that amount of money and you can kind of poke holes in the armor of a big leftist company like that, I think it's a good thing.
Well,
we need more.
Yeah, well, I think what people, and it's interesting how people try to pigeonhole him in a way that, like, he's a right winger. He's not.
Never has been. Not at all.
But that's how they're dealing with this, I guess.
When MSNBC has commentators start calling you a racist, that your platform is actually that your car company is actually racist in some ways, then you know you're winning.
Yeah.
You know, there's something behind the madness.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if he owns a Twitter as a private company, he's not cancelable.
No. Not at all. Even as their largest shareholder, that would be hard to do.
Right. Well, we'll see how it all plays out. Good luck,
Elon.
Here we go.
All right. Thanks for listening. God bless.